Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs. My name is Gareth Armstrong. It's great to be with you today. As per usual, what are we doing today? We're going to be talking about expediting the growth of your business. We have someone who was in studio a couple of weeks ago, and they used a phrase that, and we said to them, okay, we have to have you back to explain what this is all about. I'm going to try your name again, because I know I can say Selo, but that's not really how you say your name. Snelo.
It's Snelo, that's correct.
I'm getting better. Welcome back into the Future CEO studio. It's good to be with you again. We're talking about chasing profit today. But you used a very interesting phrase in the last conversation we had. Just refresh our memories, please.
All right, okay, sure. Thanks for having me again, Gareth. I think there's a very huge difference between revenue and profits. Mm. And what you normally find in the tech world especially is that sometimes it takes quite a while to actually start generating revenue. Mm-hmm. And it even takes longer, you know, to start generating a profit.
Yeah, I want to jump in here very quickly because I've looked at a number of articles in preparation to this conversation, and some of the broad strokes here, should startups actually care about profitability? That's one of the headlines here from someone who is an entrepreneur themselves and now a venture capitalist. Should your startup prioritize profits over growth? There's another really good question there. And then a stat which comes from SME South Africa, it says less than a third of Africa's e-commerce startups are profitable. That's also a very interesting insight there. So this idea of chasing profits, is an important thing, but the question is what is it really? Before we go on, I just want to just thank you again to Coronation. This Future CEOs conversation is proudly brought to you by Coronation. So day in and day out, since Coronation started 25 years ago, they've never stopped working to earn your trust and make your money work for you. Coronation, trust is earned. Let's jump back into the conversation, Selo. But perhaps before we do that, just quickly introduce yourself. What's your 30-second elevator pitch?
All right, okay. My name is Celo. Nothing's changed. And I'm the co-founder and CEO of a digital platform which connects companies to a global network of freelance business professionals and industry experts for project-based work.
So if ever you wanted to get an expert in, now we can. Thank you. Thanks for doing that. Yeah. The statement that you used in our show a couple of weeks ago was you were able to reach revenue positive status in 4 months.
Yes.
So you went from a point of starting, and then it's a very rapid move into generating revenue very quickly. What we are going to do in the show today is we're going to talk about that.
Sure.
We want to uncover your process and how you approached it, because it's yourself, an accountant.
Yes.
Your business partner is a computer scientist to a certain extent. And so you think in a very particular kind of way, and we want to learn from you.
Sure.
So let's go all the way back to just starting to reveal the process.
All right. Okay. So when we launched, right, the most important thing for us was to essentially make sure that we get to the finish line the quickest. Mm. And when we get to the finish line, by that I mean we get our product or service to a fee-paying customer. Mm. That's the most important thing. So then we sat down and we said, okay, what does that journey looks like? Mm. And then what is our customer looking like, and how do we get there the quickest?
So I want to jump in here, because what I can see already is a bunch of individuals sitting down together and mapping out a journey, but it's a journey based on assumption.
Yes.
So were you guys, be honest, using a lot of assumption here, or how did you assess or qualify this opportunity?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, you have to make assumptions, you know, before you even start, you have to make assumptions, but those assumptions obviously have to be guided. And unfortunately, what you cannot do is to make a lot of assumptions, you know, because once you make a lot of assumptions, it means that now you've adopted a bing bang approach.
Or expensive assumptions, perhaps.
Or expensive assumptions, that's correct. Yeah. So for us, I think when we're still setting out the journey, it was quite important for us to actually understand, you know, in very simple terms, what would it take us to actually get to a fee-paying customer? And I think a fee-paying customer would inevitably translate into revenue.
Mm.
And when we say revenue positive, we mean that by at the end of the four months of our operations, we're able to actually generate revenue, which meant that we're revenue positive.
But a listener is probably listening to this and saying, well, isn't that obvious? You're looking for fee-generating customers. And
sure.
And I think the answer to that is no. A lot of people use a different strategy to bring in customers potentially and then try and convert them into fee-paying customers. What strategy did you use to do that? Was it a case of this idea of the long tail where you pull in people based on some kind of freemium model and then at a later stage you convert them? How did you go about this?
No. So we wanted to monetize quite quickly. Mm. You know, we wanted to monetize quite quickly because we understood that, you know, we're bootstrapping our company. So it was quite essential that we monetize quite quickly. So, in doing that, we had to make sure that we adopt the simplest approach to get to a fee-paying customer.
Mm.
And, if you allow me, in terms of the actual details of how we got there, first of all, there's this obsession. I'm not sure if it's justified or not, but there's this obsession about having a business plan, you know, to get something started.
Mm.
And we don't believe in that. You know, we really don't believe in that.
It's surprising you say that because of your background.
Sure. Yeah, well, I'd like to believe that I haven't followed the herd in terms of my background. Mm. I'm quite a risk taker, very calculated risk, of course.
Yeah, calculated risk is, yes. and risk is something that a lot of people shy away from. But
sure.
Calculated risk is something totally different. It's a different beast.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I would like to consider myself as a millennial CA. So when you look at the older generation of CAs, for instance, not that I'm taking anything away from them, but you'll find that sometimes when it comes to risk appetite, it's a bit lower.
Yeah.
Exactly. So hence I say that for us, a business plan was not important. You know, for us, having a lot of people contribute to what will obviously form part of the end product that we deliver to, or end service rather, that we deliver to a fee-paying customer, we made sure that we don't get a lot of people involved. So we did everything ourselves.
Mm.
That's quite important in order to keep your operations very, very lean. But also, it's quite important in that you have control, you know, over a lot of variables. Whereas if you start involving other people in order to get to the end product, then there are variables that sometimes you're not in control of, you know.
I think what I've also hear you saying is that you started something in an area that you were comfortable with.
Sure.
So you weren't out there just saying, here's a great idea, I'm going to try and implement it, even though I'm not technically up to speed. And you don't have to be, it's not a 10 out of 10 technical, but
sure,
maybe a 6 or a 7 out of 10 from a technical perspective. The other thing that I hear, and I perhaps want to qualify this lack of a business plan for to a certain extent, is that, of course, you're also in the digital space.
Mm.
And so what that translates into is that there are low overheads. It's not capital intensive. And so I think let's qualify it that way. It's just so that our listeners, if they're trying to start something that requires a lot of capital, they have to get funding from a large institution, they can't walk in there and have no business plan.
No, sure, definitely. Not having a business plan does not translate to not having a plan at all.
Exactly.
You know, you need to have a well-articulated plan, you know, of course, making money. Because, we're in business and we're here to make money. And we're quite unambiguous about that.
Mm.
You know, so you have to have a plan. You know, but it does not mean that you have to sit down and formalize the plan and go through great lengths in order to make sure that, you know, the plan works. You can do research, you know, back up your thinking, back up your plan, but it does not really mean that you necessarily need to have a business plan. And then the other thing that we did, so we didn't have a formal business plan, but we had a solid plan, a well-documented plan, you know, of how to carry out certain things in the business to make sure that we're revenue positive, you know. And also in terms of people involvement, we made sure that it was just the co-founders that we involve, the people that understand the vision, the people who can drive the vision, you know.
Last thing you need at that point is to get derailed by someone else's either lack of vision or misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And I hear that, and it's a really good point.
Yeah, so you have to get people who have actually bought into the vision. So, after doing that, then what we made sure that was essentially in place is to put out an MVP. Mm-hmm. Now, an MVP is a minimum viable product.
Yep.
You know, you need to make sure that you put that in the hands of potential customers.
Yeah, and
you know, they might not be the ultimate revenue paying customers or fee paying customers, but they're potential customers. Give it to them, trial it out, and go back to the drawing board.
And gather as much feedback as possible.
Get as much feedback as practically possible. Go back to the drawing board, tweak a little bit, and then ultimately, then go to your fee-paying customer. Now, when you go to your fee-paying customer, it's quite essential, of course, that in addition to your MVP, which has now been tweaked a bit and much more comprehensive and responds to the client's needs.
How many iterations did you have? Have you had? What are people expecting?
Yeah, there's been quite a few of iterations that we've had, and we continue to iterate. It's really the nature of what we do, because remember, we went out with a sufficiently refined MVP. Although when we launched, we're still rough around the edges. Mm-hmm. There's mm-hmm. absolutely no doubt about that. But a big bang approach certainly is something that's very, very, very costly sometimes, because you'll find that you've built features which take time and money. You've built features that people don't even use.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's quite important that what is it that you're selling, you know, and how quickly can you sell it?
It's the 80-20 rule, right?
Exactly. Yep. You know, yeah. So that's really essentially what we've done.
So in this journey, what you also would have discovered is that there are some things that you didn't need.
Yes.
That you didn't need to do that either cost you a lot of time or a lot of money. What were some of the things that you guys struggled with, or rather struggled with, that you got involved with that you probably shouldn't have in retrospect?
We did avoid some of the things that we didn't need, and we still don't need. And
which is what?
Like, for instance, we wanted to make sure that our needs the business needs, which is essentially what the customer would want, because remember, we are a B2B company, business to business, you know, so our clients are businesses. So we then wanted to make sure that, you know, their needs are sufficiently understood by IT. So most companies will normally use the services of a business analyst, which is someone that sits in between to interpret what business needs, and then obviously just feedback that to IT, and IT will obviously work on the solution that meets the needs of business. You know, we thought we needed that, and we knew very well that we have to translate these needs into actionable product, into actionable features. But later on, we discovered that, we don't really need this, and we still don't need it now, because the relationship between myself as a CA in the business, or the business person in the business, and Eugene, who is the IT person in the business, we've got a very, very good relationship, mutual respect for each other, and we are able to to really understand each other very well in terms of what's needed, you know, and what has to be done in order to make sure that we earn revenue, because remember, it's all about earning revenue at the end of the day. Hey,
I'm wondering, and perhaps you can give some thought to this, we hadn't chatted about this at all really, but if you're in a situation where you're a solopreneur of sorts, you don't have, in your case, you've got Eugene, who is your really, as you said, the technical side of the business, you're much more business side. If you're either sitting in a technical space or you have a great business idea, but you're a solopreneur, you don't have these individuals, where do you go? How do you find someone like that? Just a thought or two on that. Has it ever been asked to you? Yours is easy because you met each other in a different environment.
It wasn't entirely easy, I have to be honest with you, because you have to court people. you know, and to quote a co-founder is not an easy process. I have to be honest with you. It took me a year and a half almost to get to the ultimate co-founder, you know, to work with, because like I said before, it is a marriage. You know, and you have to be very, very, very delicate in how you move about that process, in courting a co-founder. But
in a year and a half, though, I mean, you can miss an opportunity in that, though.
But you have to get it right. That's quite important, because it just affects a lot of things. You know, so you'd rather there's an ex-colleague of mine who said that you'd rather make a bad deal with a good person than a good deal with a bad person.
Okay, excellent.
You know, so the process of choosing someone to go into business with, it needs to be a meticulous process, and one that's carefully thought through, because it can be disastrous. You know, so if you are a solopreneur, for instance, I think it's quite important, if you cannot get to a co-founder or a business partner, I think it's quite important that you have a sounding board, or a board of advisors, or people that you call, people that you call upon, you know, for advice. And also those people who obviously guide you in the right direction, as long as they believe in it and they're willing to back you. So you don't have to have, but I think it, you know, I think it's quite important, because diverse opinions are quite important.
Absolutely. You need multiple views.
Exactly.
Don't you?
You need multiple views.
So what are the views that you would pick if you could pick a board of either advisors or just a whole bunch of mentors? What are the three or four different views that you would want to have in your business? Fortunately, you've got a very strong financial background.
Sure.
So finance would be one of mine, the pillars.
Yes.
You've got a very strong technical individual in Eugene.
Sure.
What are the other elements that you would put around the table when you're trying to make decisions? What are those views that you need?
Yeah, I think it's quite important to also, in making that decision, I think it's quite important to have an intimate understanding of your business model and what your business is about.
Okay. Because it'll obviously, so before we even have the conversation.
Yes, you know, because let's say, for instance, you're not in a tech business, you wouldn't want someone who's is good in IT, for instance, because it doesn't make sense in your business. So I think it's quite important to have an intimate understanding of your business model and what your product or service is all about. For instance, with us, having strong IT backing or someone who has an intimate knowledge of IT is quite important, because remember, we're a tech business, you know. But also when we started roping people in, you know, into the company, we had to make sure that we understood what we were about. All right, remember that our digital platform in essence is a fusion of IT, business or consulting, and also recruitment, because before people become part of our network of professionals and experts, they need to be vetted.
Yeah, there's a vetting process.
Exactly. Absolutely. So the next important thing is obviously to make sure that we have someone who's very, very strong, you know, in the human capital or recruitment space, and hence we brought in Lerato Manaka, you know, who's previously been with, with your Michael Page and Deloitte and so forth, you know, in that particular space. Because also remember that for us to make a sale that gives us money, there has to be someone who is a professional or a consultant. We have to allocate that someone to a client. Now, we have to allocate that someone to a client using IT. So then we understood very well that this is our business model, and this is how our business model has actually manifested itself. And in order to make sure that we get to the customer, remember, it's all about revenue. So in order to make sure that we get to a fee-paying customer, these are the most important pillars in our business. And it's quite important that we find people who are very, very strong in these certain pillars so that we get to a revenue-positive position.
So tell me, I don't know if it was a slip of the tongue or if it was just the way that you'd positioned it, but just tell me, did these pillars reveal themselves, or did you identify them pre-launch or pre-development?
No, it was definitely something that we've identified pre-launch.
Pre, okay.
You know, because we understood our business.
Yes.
You know, we understood what our business is
about.
Well,
let me put a little caveat. You thought you understood your business, right? Because sometimes you think you do, but it actually reveals, something else reveals itself later. And where this comes from is actually here at Cliff Central, there was a very wise individual over in the States that they were talking to. And what happened there was that they had said, in the first year you struggle through your business and you're excited. The second year is a real struggle because now you're trying to figure out where you're going to be making money. And the third year is actually the year that you discover what you are really doing, the value that you really offer.
Yeah, 100%. And maybe just to put it differently, understanding your business is almost incremental as opposed to radical. You know, it does not happen overnight, or you never have aha moment, you know, but it takes a process of iterations in order to actually get there. And when you get there, you might find that something that was correct 6 months ago no longer applies, and it's absolutely wrong 6 months after.
And it worked for that phase.
Exactly. So our understanding back then is completely different to now. And now we're on a completely different position. And we still think we understand our business. We'd like to believe that we understand our business, but it's quite important that we understand our business. So we continue to learn, you know, continue to iterate all the time, you know, but that in itself will help us get to our ultimate position.
So when you're confronted with a situation where you don't actually know what to do, almost a position perhaps of failure, what do you instinctively do? What do you do with Eugene? How do you guys face that together?
Okay. Very, very interesting question. And thanks for and thank you very much for asking the question. Actually, we had our we just had a co-founders meeting earlier this morning, and we come across things that we don't know, but I think it's quite important, and maybe that's and maybe that's what I would like to instill also in in my team, is the fact that if you don't know, be comfortable to actually be brave enough to do it to the best of your ability. Put your best foot forward. Get it wrong. Because remember, we've never done this before. You know, so now what I'm trying to do is to make sure that the entire team is comfortable with making mistakes, because if you don't make mistakes, you don't learn. It's as simple as that. And fear and innovation, unfortunately, does not go hand in hand.
I hear you saying it's as simple as that. But sometimes, and let me paraphrase Gil Overd, one of the Dragons Den Dragons and Shark Tank Sharks, where he describes he would rather
be Creative Council.
Yeah, and Creative Council, exactly, co-CEO there. Where what he would do is, if he was given the opportunity to invest in two different people, one never had making mistakes or never had failed in business, and one that had, he would rather choose the person that had failed. So that sounds nice on the surface. Well, it sounds nice when someone is saying, well, we love risk taking and failure in our business, but there's a line that has to be drawn, surely.
Yeah, sure, definitely. There has to be a line that that needs to be drawn. And hence I say that if you do it and you're unsure, make sure that you do it to the best of your ability. Put your best foot forward, you know. And if it turns out to be incorrect, then be comfortable and fluid enough to actually learn from that mistake. Because to make a mistake, you learn. There's an opportunity to actually learn. But to repeat a mistake, you know, that's actually quite bad.
Exactly.
You know, so hence that Silicon Valley thinking or mentality of saying that I would invest in people who have failed before sometimes does actually hold water.
So let's round the conversation up. Let's pull this all together. We're chasing profit.
Sure.
The first pillar or port of call is revenue. So you want to be revenue positive as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
You guys were able to, through what you've shared today, achieve that in four months,
sure,
which is a really impressive impressive feat.
Sure.
The next step is then profit.
Yeah.
What do you see? How do you see yourself generating the profit that you want to be generating going forward? What are some of the steps that you need to implement over the next short period?
All right. I think, I don't want to be rude in saying this, but chasing profit sometimes is almost, especially in the first 5 years, I'll think that it's short-sighted, you know, especially if you're in it for the long term. I think growth is much more important, which was actually a question, or rather a comment, that one of your listeners had.
Yeah, profit,
you
know, or growth. Yeah,
profit or growth, you know, and most companies who are obsessed with scaling and obviously making an impact, you know, they focus on growth rather than I mean, rather than making profit, you know, Amazon made losses for the longest time, you know.
To position themselves for the profit.
To position themselves for, for profits. You know, it was all about making sure that you cement growth, you solidify your position, you scale. Once you scale, you are going to essentially find ways of monetizing the scale that you've reached, you know. So, and we certainly believe that, you know, for us it's essentially about growth, but making sure that obviously there's money in the business, which is why we aim for revenue. You know, we aggressively pursue revenue so that there's money in the business. But then in terms of profitability, it's not something that we chase quite aggressively. You know, we understand obviously that we need to be profitable at some at some stage, but we're lucky in that we don't have the pressure as well from external shareholders exerting that pressure on us to be profitable. I think we're fortunate in that regard. But for us, it's more about scale. It's more about growth. And once you've reached sufficient scale, then you can build a lot of business models around that scale.
Yeah.
You know, because...
Yeah, there's going to be multiple revenue opportunities.
Exactly.
And then that really equals multiple profit-taking opportunities.
Exactly, yeah.
Which sometimes aren't necessarily the main... that original idea that you had thought was going to generate your profit.
Yeah, because we pivot.
Yep.
You know...
Well, you not only pivot, but you also add the revenue stream. Yes. And you allow then one part of the business to run the business, and then you use the other parts of the business to profit.
Yeah, we certainly believe that we need to build for scale, have whatever we've built engaged, and once we have whatever we've built engaged, then build business models. On top of that.
Sally, you're one of the founders of Linked Pro. You guys are doing a really, really good job. We appreciate you coming in and sharing some of the blueprint that you have used in your business to first generate revenue and then move on to generating profits. We're going to have to wrap up at this point, but thank you. Thank you so very much for your time.
Sure. Thanks very much for having me, hey.
Appreciate. This Future CEO's conversation was proudly brought to you by Coronation. Ups, downs, good days, bad days. Since Coronation started 25 years ago, through the highs and lows, they work every day to make your money work for you. Coronation, trust is earned.
A lot can happen in a day. A lot has happened since the day Coronation started 25 years ago. The first democratic election in 94, rugby champions in 95, two Nobel Peace Prize winners, one indomitable Nkosi Johnson, but there was also the 2008 crash and global recession. Then, what a day when we kicked off the World Cup. South Africans united, we pushed on and believed.
Unbelievable, unbelievable.
From the day Coronation started, through the highs and the lows, we worked every day to earn your trust and make your money work for you. To invest your money today, visit coronation.com. Coronation, trust is earned. Coronation is an authorized financial services provider and approved manager of collective investment schemes.
Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com.